Well, it looks like our renowned vet contributor here, Pete Weatherburn from Brave Vet in Old Connaught and PeteTheVet.com, is moving along to the more, I suppose, areas of intellectual discussions, because he's just written a letter to The New Scientist and he had it published. Standard must be. But anyway, Pete, you're very welcome.
Good morning. Yeah, I've been subscribing to New Scientist for the last year. And so you get the magazine through the door once a week, and you also get access to online. And I really, really enjoy it. Partly for veterinary science, because they're actually very good at bringing animal stories to the fore through New Scientist, but also just, like, I've been learning about everything from astronomy to quantum computers to human medicine, all sorts of stuff. But just a couple of weeks ago, they did a big feature about vegan pet food. And it was a very well-written feature, but it was a little bit one-sided. Some details of it I didn't agree with, so I felt the need to write a wee letter
to rebel it. Okay, so which side were they taking?
Well, they were taking the very pro-vegan pet food side. So basically, there's a very strong advocate for vegetarian and vegan pet food in the UK. He's an academic called Andrew Knight, and he's a vet with a very, very strong animal welfare desire. And he has been promoting vegan and vegetarian pet food very strongly. And one of the things that he did is that he did a survey of thousands of dog and cat owners who had their pets on vegan pet food, and he asked them about how many health issues they had. And on the basis of that, he sort of concluded right. That it's healthier. But his study was critiqued by people saying, well, actually, look, it's owner-reported stuff. They're not necessarily going to tell you exactly what really, really did happen, so you need to be more objective than that. So there's a lot of discussion in the veterinary world about this stuff.
Well, explain it to me, because it's either he's coming from a desire to have the world be vegan and vegetarian and he's fitting the pets in, or else there's a good scientific reason why pets in particular, are being vegan or vegetarian. I mean, there is a case that we can survive with plants only and maybe save the planet, but I don't know about evolution of dogs.
Yes, well, and the thing is that the truth, you see, is somewhere between the both extreme views. Truth is that dogs certainly can survive very, very well on vegan food. No problem at all. Dogs are metabolically, they're omnivores, so they don't actually need meat. Even though people think about dogs as loving meat so much, how can you be so cruel as not to give them meat? They actually can survive very, very well on vegan food, as long as it's properly formulated, so that we know that nutritionally and chemically it's complete. Dogs can survive very well. And for dogs, to be honest, a lot of dogs eat dry kibble anyway, and as far as the dog's concerned, whether there's meat ingredients or plant ingredients, as long as it's tasty enough, dogs are quite happy. And so it doesn't make a huge difference to them. Now, the thing is this, cats are very, very different. Cats are what's called obligate carnivores. In other words, they need to eat meat. They need that. Their metabolism needs that. They have certain nutrients that are only available from meat. And that's why you can't just feed a cat on vegan food. And if you do, you're likely to get into real bother, serious bother, with cats becoming very,
very
ill. Are we
talking B12 or something like that?
It's more complicated. B12 is one of them, but there's other nutrients, essential fatty acids, that can only be got from animal tissue, and other vitamins as well. So it's really very important that you look into the detail very closely. And in fact, as well as my letter, it's about something else which I'll come to, there was a letter from a vet who lectures in pet nutrition. He was making the point that whenever he's questioned people who promote vegan pet food, they've never been able to answer how to get these particular nutrients from a vegan source.
But I'm just wondering about the vet's initial argument. Is it based on, as I asked you, it's healthier for the planet, or is it healthier for the actual living animal themselves?
Well, you see, it's the argument is that it's healthier for the planet, for sure.
So there's an agenda
it's better for animal welfare as well, because you don't have to kill animals to feed your pets. But the question is it worse for your pet's health or better for your pet's health? the answer is the research that the chap did suggested it was better for their health. I think most vets would believe it's actually fairly neutral. It doesn't make it better or worse for dogs, but there's a risk with cats that it could make it worse. So you have to be very careful with cats. But I wrote to the... My letter was about something else, Declan, and that's that the article about vegan pet foods and about how it's better for the environment to have vegan food and so on, it didn't really discuss something else, which I think is even more exciting, which is feeding insect-based foods. And that's different again. So basically, what insect-based foods means is that you're growing insect larvae. They actually use something called the black soldier fly. Put these larvae into big boxes and you feed them on waste plant material, so like wonky vegetables from the supermarket or vegetables that are, or fruit that's gone out of date. You feed them on that and they then create protein which is much more like meat than other plant-based products. And the other thing is that it's much more palatable. Insects, although they sound a bit yucky to us, I've done trials with dogs, and if you put vegan food in front of them and insect food in front of them, and meat in front of them, they eat the insects equally happily as they'll eat the meat-based, and they won't be quite so interested in the vegan-based. So I think that and the main thing is that insect-based food reduces the impact on the environment massively. The concern people have about livestock production is the greenhouse gas emissions, and insect production compared to general livestock meat production, it reduces the greenhouse gas output by over 95%, so it makes a very big difference. And what's really exciting is there's an Irish insect-based food that's been launched recently. It's called OMU, which is O-M-U-U. If you go to omu.com, you'll see. And basically, this is a young Irish vet who's passionate about the idea of saving the world, if you like, through pet food. And so he's created this insect-based food. I think it's a great product, and I think that if you look at the present, probably only around 1% of pets are fed on vegan or insect-based foods. I think that will probably grow to 10 or 20% over the coming decades. Right.
There was a woman I spoke to, maybe, could be five, time just runs away, I can never tell, but in Blessington, who'd started a company, and it was insect food. She was,
food for
cultivating insects and then selling, you know, the insects to eat.
For humans?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, I know when I was a backpacker back in my 20s, I was in Thailand, and one of the things that I ate was a silkworm that had been put into an oven and heated up and cooked, and it looked like a great big maggot, and it looked absolutely disgusting. But they were all eating them, and they get sort of offer you one, and you just out of politeness had to eat the thing, and it tasted like creamed sweet corn. Really very, very pleasant. Just a bit odd to think about and a bit odd to look at. But when you have it in your mouth and you're eating it, well, it was quite tasty. So maybe this is a hurdle, a mental hurdle we all need to get over for ourselves and for our pets.
Yeah, but are the silkworms cruelly treated in the process?
Actually, that's a very good point, because I did ask, I asked Frank, who's behind Omu Pet Foods, how they kill them, because that's important. And what they do is they actually chill them. They chill them and then they deep freeze them. So as far as they're concerned, it feels like winter's coming on, if you like, and so they go into hibernation. And once they're safely hibernating, well, then they're crushed and that's the end of it. So there will be absolutely no sensation on their part of pain or discomfort. Declan, these things are important.
Of course, yeah. I'm just listening to you. It's just, you know, as you go through and tell us all about it. Yeah, so do you see this as the future? Oh, by the way, did you get a good response from the vet himself in The New Scientist who came up with the original article?
No, they didn't respond. Usually they respond to letters, but he hasn't responded to letters so far anyway. That might be different when the print version comes out. This has just gone up online today, so it's a bit early.
He probably has a bounty on your head or something.
I think the main thing to stress is whatever you feed your pet, it has to be nutritionally complete. And you have to be sure of that. And it must say that on the bag. If it says it on the bag, then you know that legally it's been checked so that it is nutritionally complete. That's the most important thing. And we only see problems as vets when people feed odd things that aren't nutritionally complete, like cats fed on nothing but liver or dogs fed on nothing but porridge. those are the animals that get into serious trouble. So if you try to feed your cat on carrots and broccoli, that's a big fail. Yeah. Your cat would get sick and die.
What about cow's milk? A lot of people say, oh, look at the little cat. Oh, give them some cow's milk.
Well, it's quite specific, that one, but cats don't have the enzyme lactase to digest lactose, to digest the sugar in milk. So if they have anything but a little bit of milk, they're likely to get diarrhea. So that's probably something to avoid, but I wouldn't get hung up on it.
Okay, all right. All right, thanks very much indeed, Pete, for all that. You can now spend the next minute and a half talking about phones.
Yeah, you and I, that's a private conversation, yeah. Declan.
So where are you at the moment?
Oh, phones? Well, I'm on a Pixel 6, Google Pixel Fix. It's a great phone, best phone I've ever had. It's a year old now, and they've just released Google Pixel 7. So I'm looking at it with a little bit of temptation, but I don't think my current phone is bad enough for me to need the new one.
And what about the battery life?
Battery life is a day. You know, it almost never runs out.
How often do you use it, though? That's the thing.
It does depend on that an awful lot, doesn't it? I think if you use any phone all the time, continually, you're going to run out after half a day, probably. Yeah. But for occasional use, like most of us have with our phones, I think most of the current generation of phones are we'll get you from morning till early evening, at least. Yeah.
Just one last thing. I only have, 45 seconds. The traffic coming up from Old Connor onto Dublin Road to Castle Street and all that, does it ever let up?
There's times of the day when it's fine, but that's one of the reasons why I cycle to work, because I can predictably get from home. I live near the station here on Killarney Road. I can predictably get to work in 7 minutes, whereas if I drive, it could take me half an hour sometimes. Yeah, it's a big issue, the traffic, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I was on public transport. It's 28 minutes. That's from Windsor Motors to here at East Coast.
Oh, that's appalling.
On a 145.
Oh, good grief.
28
you'd
minutes.
Be much quicker walking, Declan.
Exactly, yeah. I was wondering. Anyway, we'll do something about the traffic at some stage. Pete Wedderburn from Brave Vet and Pete the Vet and the new scientist. thanks for coming in.